You know, it's not too good when you start off the show with an apology, but I am going to apologize because, as you'll be able to tell in the main part of the show, I really hadn't done all my homework that I should have done on a couple of things that I talked about. One is Kickstarter, and the other one is write-in votes. I've done a little bit of research since I put that first part down, but not a lot, and it's going to take a lot of research to be able to make something like that happen. Kind of a little teaser to get you to listen to the show. But this week I start off talking about legalization of marijuana because that's coming up in Missouri and there's been some stuff in the local news about it. And I talk about it mainly just because I don't care either way about that issue. But what I use it for is to demonstrate how ridiculous it is to try to legislate morality. You can't do it. And that's kind of basically what my whole thing is about today, my whole podcast. It's about centrism, being right in the center. And why? Reason I say that is because I believe pretty much everybody on the planet is a centrist. The reason for that is I believe everybody actually way down deep is a lot like me, which is liberal on the social issues and conservative on the fiscal issues. And I think that's just true of everybody. First of all, you don't want anybody telling you what to do. And here in America, you still can do pretty much whatever you want to do as long as you're not killing people. And so that's, you know, a right that we're starting to lose, and actually we're losing it quite a bit in that they're making new laws every day to try to restrict what you can do, what you can't do. But everybody, I don't care who you are on this planet, wants that freedom to be able to do pretty much whatever they want to do as long as they're not hurting anybody else. But they are conservative in many matters. Not everybody is, and it's all, everybody's a little bit different, but way down deep, they're conservative in many matters. They want other people that have dealings with anything that has to do with their ownership, their fiscal part of their life, you want it done properly. And there should be rules and regulations and laws about how you handle other people's property. That's pretty much the show anyway. It's using the legality and illegality of marijuana to demonstrate how ridiculous it is to try to legislate morality. And then I kind of show how it kind of puts us all in the very center in varying degrees because we want to do what we want to do and we want to have people take our ownership serious. Hope you enjoy the show. And as always, I like to mention, please, if you have any questions or comments about the show, go to my website, newmediacentral.org. There's a place in there for comments. Just leave me a comment. Generally speaking, I'll get right back to you on it, or I might talk about it in the next week's podcast, or one way or another, if you leave me a message, I'll get back with you. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Talk today about how certain topics are just really hot buttons. An example of that is I live in Missouri. The state of Missouri is considering legalizing marijuana. Now, that's really a hot button topic. It's been compared to alcohol prohibition, and we know where that went. The result of it, when you think about prohibition of alcohol and the way that it ended up being, people were saying, yeah, if we make alcohol legal, it's going to make, everybody's going to become alcoholics and it's going to be chaos and it's going to be horrible. Well, the end result is that it didn't really change things very much as far as how many people were drinking it and how drunk they got on it. During Prohibition, everybody was drinking it. When they legalized it, it didn't really change usage or extent of the drinking that happened very much. Anyway, we know that making something legal or illegal doesn't really change the behavior of people very much as far as that goes. Same thing with marijuana. The people who are against marijuana say it's really bad for you and it's going to cause problems and people are going to die that shouldn't die because they're smoking pot and that kind of thing. It's not going to change things that much as far as behavior and as far as how many people are smoking it. Maybe some more people will start smoking it. I remember talking to a friend of mine. He's about my age, in his 50s, and he said that if marijuana became legal, he would probably start smoking again. And what happened was, somewhere in his 20s, he stopped smoking it. He smoked it as a teenager in high school and shortly thereafter. He smoked it like a lot of his peers did, and he just gave it up because it's illegal and he's a law-abiding citizen and he didn't get out of it what he used to get out of it and a number of things. But he told me if it became legal, he would probably smoke again. So, people like him, possibly there would be an increase in the number of people smoking it, but I think it would be pretty small. But the reason I bring that up isn't because I'm for or against the legalization of pot. I haven't smoked it myself in a long time. I'm like him. I haven't smoked it since I was in my 20s, partly because it's not legal. It's also partly because I got married and I had kids and I had responsibilities, and I realized that getting high wasn't a real good way to take care of that. So it wasn't a real conscious effort or anything like that. It's just that it just went out of vogue in our daily life. The reason I brought that up is what I want to talk about is centrism and why I'm a centrist. I've explained many times that I am a centrist on this podcast, and I will probably talk about it a lot more because I truly believe that everybody basically in the world is a centrist. There are people that go to the extreme on either way, leftist, liberals and conservatives across the world, however they define their differences and their political beliefs, but it basically boils down to liberalism and conservatism on some level. Once again, I'll just kind of briefly go over what I believe as being a centrist means to me anyway. It is a centrist is in the middle. And because I lean towards the left on social issues, not completely, I also lean to the right on fiscal issues. You got to get the money part right. We're stewards of the world treasury, and we have to take care of it. When I say I'm a liberal on social issues, I don't mean by any stretch of the imagination that you should go out and be bad and mean to your neighbors and et cetera, et cetera. What I mean is you cannot legislate morality. You just can't. It brings to mind a song from the old Broadway hit, The Fantastics. It's called Why Do the Kids Put Jam on the Cat? And the answer in that song is, it's simply because we say no. And that's how, no matter how old you are, the little kid in us is defiant. If someone tells us not to do something, we're going to do it. If someone tells us to do something, we're going to figure out a way not to do it. And to whatever degree we do that, it's part of us. We're defiant by nature. And if someone tells you not to do something, you have an instinct to want to do it. When it comes to moral issues, people have their own idea of what's moral. I mean, there's certain fundamental things. You don't want to go around killing people, and I don't have to go through the list. Everybody knows what their idea of morality is. I think you have to set your own moral compass, and you have to use your own common sense and, belief in what's right and what's wrong to set your course in life. Another thing I have about morality and trying to legislate it is, who's going to enforce it? I mean, they have judges and lawyers and elected officials and politicians. Show me one. Show me one politician that doesn't have skeletons in their closet and can really say, yes, this is wrong. You should be punished for doing this. You can't find them. I mean, and the higher up you go in the government and the more towards the federal government you get, the worse it is. I mean, those guys are completely corrupted, completely. And it's true for all of them. And you'll have, when I make that statement, you'll have someone come up and say, hey, no, I know this, my politician, my congressman, he's straightforward and he's really good. If you could just lift up the blanket and see what's really under there and see what's really going on, my guess is the politicians would be some of the most corrupt people on earth in this country and in others. That's how it is. Actually, how it's pretty much always been, and for sure now it is. They were able to kind of cover it up a little bit better in the past, but, I mean, John Kennedy was one of my favorite presidents of all time, second maybe only to Ron Reagan. But I still think he's the one of the greatest American presidents after all the stuff I know about him. And we have just found out things about him that aren't truly wonderful. An example, he was a womanizer. He was married and he was an adulterer, to a big time adulterer. He was also involved in a cover-up about his health. He was very sick and could barely get around. And he's not the only president that was like that. More than one that covered up their health. You know, that's up to them. But how are they going to stand there and say, no, you're morally improper over there because you're doing something improper, when they've got all that baggage of their own? Who's going to do it? Who's going to police it? Who's going to enforce it? And recent thing in the news is Brian Williams. You know, we have this thing in our heads as Americans that that journalists, especially the national news desk, the nightly news, these guys, you know, from Dan Rather forward, they were indisputable. What they said was golden. And we've come to find out, like so many other things, that it's not even close to the truth. They were the other way. They made up stuff. All of them did it. Not just Brian Williams and not just Dan Rather and not just a few. They all do. It's part of the culture. They have an agenda. They want a story to go a certain way, and they'll say whatever they need to and whatever they think they can get by with to make the story come out the way they want it to. The way I see it is morality is up to the individual. Collectively, it kind of swings back and forth. It's like sometimes we become really moral and everything, you know, has to be just so, and we have people discussing how important it is to be moral, and the whole country kind of goes on this moral swing where everybody wants to do the right thing. Then we get tired of that and we swing back the other way. And I think of the 60s anti-establishment, and what it was, these kids in college who for the first time in their lives were allowed to think however they wanted to think, and they were at an age, you know, college age, you start putting things together. It's a time in your life that a lot of things start coming together, and you start gelling some ideas in your head, and you come to conclusions. And these college kids in the 60s looked at the world and they said, huh, this is stupid. This is crazy. We can't do this anymore. And so they changed. They were anti-establishment. If the establishment said to do something this way, they did it the other. Who knows whether they're right or wrong? And that just kind of illustrates the pendulum swinging. It swings back and forth. It's people get all uptight about laws, and they really, you know, bam, bam, bang on the desk and say, this is how it's going to be, and you kids, you're going to do this the right way. And the kids follow along, and they go, yeah, yeah, and they are raised in that kind of situation. They try it with their kids, and it goes to the extreme. The pendulum swings over, and then it swings back. Sometimes it's a jerky swing, like in the 60s. It was kind of a big, sudden type change, even though it took a decade or so. Sometimes change happens quickly, and sometimes it happens pretty slowly. Still, who's going to enforce it? You know, if a sleazeball politician comes and tells me I got to start doing something a certain way, like Barack Obama tells me I got to have insurance, what am I going to do? I'm going to flip him the bird, literally. I mean, and I've done it. We just have to know in our own hearts and minds and decide what's good, what's nice, and what's normal, and what's moral, and choose to follow that or not. We should. I've spoken before about societies and rules and how to get along and what happens when you don't. And in that vein, we should try to be good citizens and compassionate and moral and help our neighbors if they need help and do the right thing. But there's just no agency out there that can do it. I just don't think, I don't think there is. I don't think you can do that. One of the problems with it too is, and you can read about this in other societies and other times in history, where what happens when you start trying to legislate morality is you increase the number of laws, and the laws get more, there's more and more laws. And what happens eventually is nobody can be a law-abiding citizen the way they have the law set up. And I think we're in that situation right now. Matter of fact, I'm absolutely certain of it. There's no way you can be a totally law-abiding citizen today. They've got the laws set up so that at any given time, on any given person, they can say, you're breaking the law here. We need you to stop that, and we're going to put you in jail at gunpoint. You know, all over the world, it's crazed dictators, politicians, and governments using law enforcement as a tool. It's a means to an end. They want to have a certain thing happen, and to get that to happen, they have to have a law, so they make a law, and then they can say whatever they want to anybody, and at any time, they can incarcerate at gunpoint anybody they want. It's not doable, in my opinion. In the real world, in my real world, being the centrist that I am, it's the social side that you have to be liberal about. You have to take whatever anybody else believes is important to them and be able to go, oh, well, okay, that's important to you. It's not that important to me, but who am I to say? The thing that's important to you is not worthy, and the thing that's important to me is absolute. I don't have that in me to be able to think that or say that. I know a lot of people do. In my heart of hearts, and I believe in almost everybody else's heart of hearts, they feel the same way. The other side of that, though, the thing that keeps me in the center from being on the left is the fiscal side. And I think you got to be right on the money. I'm conservative in fiscal matters. And I think you have to be dead right on money matters and ownership. There's a lot of people, especially people in the federal government right now, elected officials in the federal level, believe we have no right to ownership. They haven't come right out and said it yet, but they're doing everything they can right now to ensure that the general public has no ownership. They want the government, the state, to own everything, which means they own it. And they want the general public, you and me, to not own anything. Whenever the government goes, well, okay, yeah, you can have this little crumb here, and you better be glad you got that. So, to continue my reasoning behind why I believe that you should be conservative on the fiscal end is I think everybody on this planet, no matter who you are, no matter where you live, you have the right of ownership, and everybody wants it, whether they claim to or not. You know, and even though depending on many factors, the playing field isn't exactly level at all times, but all of us desire and deserve the right of ownership. Everybody wants to have that sense that they have taken care of, at least temporarily, the things that we need to live, like food, clothing, shelter. If someone says, we don't need ownership, we should just go through life and whatever comes our way, we should just, you know, use that and be happy with it. No. That same person is real happy to go home, to their home, whether they're renting it or own it or whatever. They have a place they can call their own, and they have some stuff in the house, no matter where they are, no matter what country they live in. And when that's disrupted, they're very, very unhappy. And it is disrupted in a lot of places in the world, and it's sad that that's the case. But every one of those people would like to have a home and like to have a place they can go where they can feel safe and they can be happy with their families. And that is ownership. People want to be able to own stuff. And for anybody to come along and say, no, you can't own that. You know, we're hardwired to accumulate things, our existence and our comfort. Most of our lives, we work hard to achieve things. And for anybody to say, you know, you didn't build that, it's gone beyond the pale. You know, those are, you may remember, the preposterous words of Elizabeth Warren, and they were espoused by Hussein Obama during a 2012 campaign speech in Roanoke, Virginia. I've got a message for Warren and Obama and anybody else who says you didn't build that, you don't own that, you can't claim ownership to that. I got something to say to them. I say, man, if I do all the work to make a go of something, I want the rewards for it. I want to own it. I want the ownership of that. And I sure as heck don't want to line your pockets or give it to you in the form of taxes so you can do your social engineering experiments with it. It ain't going to happen. At least I'm not going to give it to you willingly. We got a corrupt group of elected officials currently, and we just can't trust them to be good stewards of the national treasure. There's many people speaking out for change in that regard, but there's little action so far. I think the main reason for that is it's going to take a revolution to change it. And there's a lot of people that really don't want to be involved in something that huge. But it's going to take that. That's what it's going to take. It's a huge task, and it's very difficult to even begin it. What I think about that is at some point we'll achieve a critical mass and the revolution will begin, and it will happen whether anybody wants it to or not. Part of that, and what needs to happen in that, is a very much needed first step would be to get someone that's a non-selected by the machine candidate. And I think you know what I mean by that if you listened to me before, is there's only a handful of people that the machine has selected as electable, and it's because they're handpicked by these people and they can do whatever they want. There's maybe 1,000 of them. It seems like it, anybody could be president or anybody could be a congressman or a senator or whatever, but it's not the case now. It's a handful. It's a small handful of people, maybe 1,000. I don't know what the real number is. I don't know if anybody does, but it's a small select group of people who can be elected to government office, especially federal level in this country. And so what we need to do as a first step, or maybe a step, I don't know if it's the first one, there's people that are doing things already to try to combat the situation we're in right now, but a critical step would be to get someone from the outside elected. And the problem's money. And that's how the machine wins. That's how the machine has a lock on this, is because they got a lot of money. They got most of the money. And they can pretty much get whatever they want done. But there are ways. And I heard a podcast, actually, and the guy on the podcast had a great idea. I don't know if it was his idea or if he'd heard it before, or I can tell you that it's not my idea, although I've thought about this a lot, and I've thought that the computer and the internet are the way that it's going to happen. And what it boils down to is we have the ability to do write-in votes in this country, and what it will take is each state has their own way of doing it, so we'd have to be really clear on the subject, but it would work because we do have write-in, the ability to write in a candidate. I think that in some states they have to declare themselves to be a write-in candidate. I'm not sure exactly what it is. I'm unclear on it right now myself. I looked at it a little bit, and I know there are quite a few hoops you got to jump through, but it's doable. I do know that. It's doable. You can be elected as a write-in candidate, and the way we could ensure that it would happen would be to do it without using money, because using money, we can't do it. And one thing that you can do on the internet is you can get your word out to a huge, large number of people for very little cost. Matter of fact, there's not a huge, large number of people listening to my podcast, but there could be. And there are some podcasts out there that have a really large following. What that means to me is we can get the word out. And the thing that this guy was talking about, and the thing that intrigues me, is there's a thing called it's crowdsourcing, it's called. And there's a thing, one of them is Kickstart. And what they do is they raise money for worthwhile projects and investors, and they can get together and go, oh yeah, this is a good idea. And the way it works is there's a proposal out there, and if there are enough backers, enough people thinking it's a good idea to reach a certain goal, a predetermined goal of a certain amount of money or a certain amount of time, if that goal is reached, these people that have pledged something, if the goal is met, they have to do it. And hopefully to be willingly, because they would have never pledged if they hadn't wanted to in the first place. But, well, in this example, the way it would work is instead of money, it would be votes. And what we would say is if 250,000 people agree that this is the guy they want to vote for, and they pledge their vote for this guy, then they would be bound to do it. And when election time came around, there would be enough people. It would take more than 250,000, obviously, but however many it would take to get the number of votes for this non-selected by the machine candidate to be elected. I mean, that's how we could do it without the money. We could get people to pledge to vote for a non-selected by the machine candidate as a write-in and get the guy elected. I mean, it can happen, and it's may not be the only way, but I think it's a good idea, and it may not be the way that we end up doing it, but it's a good idea, and it's something that we could do. It's something that we could really actually do with the current laws and the way things are set up and the way we could beat the machine. And one thing I thought about is we'd have to do it pretty doggone quick, because as soon as the machine found out about it, they'd figure out a way to quash it. But anyway, crowdsourcing, that'd be the way to do it. To bring this whole thing full circle, I think everyone in the world, literally, is just like me. We don't need to legislate morality. Each human on the planet has their own biases and based on their environment and social situations, but each has the innate ability to determine moral and immoral behavior, right from wrong. Some choose to listen to their better angels, and some people choose not to, but you can't force it by law. It's never going to work. Of course, there's some sicknesses people get, mental sickness, where they really can't tell, and for those people, we need to be able to take care of them also in some way. But basically, pretty much everybody knows right from wrong, moral from immoral, things you should do and things you should not do. We have to have something in place in case someone does go off their nut and start doing bad things, hurting people or killing people. You know, in that situation, that's when law enforcement comes in and intervenes and puts a stop to it. You know, otherwise, short of physical harm, laws for morality are basically useless. Instead, laws should be enacted to protect ownership. If you steal my car, you're going to go to jail. And if you come into my house uninvited, you're going to die. And I, after I shoot somebody for coming in my house uninvited and don't leave when I tell them to, I'm the victim. And I'll be protected. That's what the law should do. And if you think about it, you know, in that situation, it's really easy not to get dead for trespassing. All you got to do is not come on my property. Because probably if you come on my property uninvited, you got one thing in mind. You want to take some of my stuff. And like I said, we all have the right of ownership. Every person on the earth has that right. Whether we get, you know, we get it or not, we have that right. If you don't want to get dead, don't come on my property to take my stuff from me. I won't even come close to ever shooting you if you do that, or don't do that. And, you know, finally, if you misappropriate public funds, you should burn in hell.